A recent Pew survey found that 59% of Americans report that having conversations with people who have different political opinions is, quote, stressful and frustrating. And that's probably an understatement. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In today's political climate, there is a lot more shouting and a lot less civil conversation. Many people have actually cut those who disagree with them out of their lives. This hour, we're going to find out how to have those difficult conversations. And it's the first day of our fall membership drive. If you value the conversations we have on Talk of Iowa, become a member of Iowa Public Radio at iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. If you spend any time online, you know that our highly charged political environment has caused a further decline in online civility. But it's taken a toll in real life, too. It's hard to talk to someone who disagrees with you on a subject you care about. It can even be hard to listen to someone who disagrees with you. Friendships have been broken, family relationships have been strained, and things can get particularly tricky in the office or the workplace. This hour, we're going to talk about how to have difficult conversations. And with me today, Allison Oliver. She is a University of Iowa lecturer in the School of Social Work. Hello, Allison.
Hello.
Jeffrey Palermo is also here, development coordinator for the University of Iowa School of Social Work. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hi.
And just yesterday, they held a workshop for people on that very subject, how to have difficult conversations. And Allison, what prompted you to hold this workshop? What were you seeing? What were you hearing where you thought, this is something that we need to get together with people and talk about?
Sure. So this is an idea that came up last year, shortly after the election, and we had a community meeting in our department with students and faculty and staff and getting together to talk about what next. And a lot of people were voicing their concerns about talking with relatives going home for Thanksgiving and having difficult conversations about the political climate and not knowing how to do that. And so one of the actions that came out of that conversation was developing a brown bag series about how to be more effective in our engagement around social and political issues. And so the first one that we did was last December, which was how to have difficult conversations. And giving people some tools and skills and a mindset to be able to enter into conversations when they want to be in relationship with people. And that conversation was popular enough that we thought that this is a skill that is still on people's minds about how to do this and how to do this well. And so we brought it back again for this year.
Well, and I have seen one of the things that has really scared me in the last year is seeing and hearing people say, you know, of course, you see it online. Oh, I unfriended this person, mm-hmm. or the post that says, if you disagree with me on this subject, just unfriend me right now because I have nothing to say to you. But I've also heard about people who maybe they haven't talked to their dad or their mom. I mean, there have been real important relationships that have been severed or severely strained in this deeply divided political climate. So when people aren't talking to each other, why is that such a concern, Jeffrey?
Well, I think we need one another, especially now. And if we can't talk across differences, then we're in big trouble. And social workers are required by our code of ethics to interrupt, not collude with, fight against all forms of oppression as part of their responsibilities as professionals. So we felt it was very important that we equip them with the skills to be able to do that, not just professionally, but personally as well. And I mean, we all need this. All you have to do is turn on the radio and hear the kinds of non-conversations going on. People aren't listening to one another.
Well, and I think a lot of people maybe in hearing this idea of how to have these difficult conversations, they may think, oh, good, I can learn how to convince people of what I believe. That's not really the point here, right?
No, it's not. And it does create an atmosphere where any shifts of perspective can happen. And it goes with the notion that if we are seeking to understand before we're seeking to change, then we can create an environment where people are really listening to each other and then can take in different perspectives and actually consider them as opposed to, as opposed to all of our defenses being up and digging in deeper into our deeply held convictions and beliefs and attitudes.
Well, so how do you get started? I mean, when somebody says something that you strongly disagree with and you may, your first response may be to shout or to say, that's completely untrue, something like that. What do you tell people? How do you start when somebody says something that you strongly disagree with? What do you do then?
The first thing you're going to do is breathe. But and really, because this the skills that we talked about in this particular workshop are ones that require a certain access of cognitive processing, and it's about some emotional management as well. And so some of that is, in order to be able to access these skills, it's about being able to center yourself and acknowledge that you're having an emotional reaction and you're going to keep that in check right now. Those feelings are absolutely valid. They're important. And sometimes that helps us decide whether or not we can actually have a conversation right now. So one of the first things that we do is decide, am I going to get into this right now? And sometimes that answer is, no, I cannot do this right now.
I can't afford it in my personal life, in my emotional life, in my day.
Right. So that's the first thing, is about giving people permission to not have the difficult conversation if they don't really feel like they can have it right now.
So if you feel like you can't have that conversation right now, I mean, you have to do something. You have mm-hmm. to say something to extract yourself from the situation.
Sure.
So how do you do that?
Yeah. And so people have other options about, in response, they can offer their stance on it. They can offer their emotional reaction, like saying, I'm concerned about that, or saying, I feel bothered with that because. Or they can say, I'm going to have to take some time to think about that or find any kind of other exit point. And so the other route then is that if they decide, okay, I'm going to sit in this for a little bit longer and gather oneself that way, then it's really kind of switching on like that mode of that seeking to understand before seeking to change somebody's opinion or stance, and being able to say, okay, where is this person really coming from? What's going on here? What are they saying to me right now? And what's the context? And that's where we ask people to start.
Okay, so give me an example of how that might work.
So the I was trying to think of our demonstration that we did yesterday. So the first place, so if you can give me any kind of topic.
Well, let's talk vaccinations.
Okay. So let's talk vaccinations. So if you're somebody who is, if you're talking to me and I'm someone who is in favor of vaccinations and you're talking to me and I feel very strongly about it, and you respond with, I will never, ever get my kids vaccinated. And I have, that's a different, we're across difference. Then I'm going to start by making sure that I'm understanding what you're saying. And so the first process is, I'm just going to reflect back to you what I think I heard. And so that first process is going to be, you really don't want to get your kids vaccinated. And then I'm going to stop talking.
And so you're going to let the other person expand on that. And they will if you stop talking, even if you haven't asked them to explain.
Exactly. And they'll either affirm, like, yeah, there's no way. Or they'll offer a little bit more context for it. Either way, you're probably going to get more information. And then the second point is actually paying attention to what is the emotional context, which is also known as the ring in the voice. Like, where do you hear that emotional resonance when you're listening to somebody talk? And then you reflect back again what you think they're feeling.
Okay, so you try to explain it back to them. What do you accomplish by doing that?
So basically what you do is when that emotional evocation happens, it is at the forefront. And being able to compartmentalize, make a space for that emotional context, allows other kinds of conversation to be able to happen. But when those emotions are at the forefront, they're going to be leading the show. So it's a way to reduce defensiveness as well as honor the emotions that are in it, because those emotions are always valid. And so even if we disagree about the facts or the logic or anything, those emotions are always valid and powerful. They help inform our attitudes and decisions. So when we can make a place for those and acknowledge that and say, I hear your concerns, it doesn't mean agreeing, but I hear your concerns, it provides a better space that we can continue a conversation to actually get into what does this mean for us.
So it kind of diffuses the emotion, the heightened emotion of that conflict.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Allison Oliver and Jeffrey Palermo of the University of Iowa School of Social Work. Just yesterday, they held a workshop entitled How to Have Difficult Conversations to Keep People Talking to Each Other Even If They Disagree Very Strongly. We're going to continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about how to have difficult conversations. And this is a position that, of course, many of us have found ourselves in over the years. But it seems like in the past year, there have been a lot more moments for difficult conversations. We'd love to hear from you if you have questions, you have a story to share, or maybe a time when you've had a difficult conversation and actually came away with your mind changed. We'd love to hear your story. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Allison Oliver, University of Iowa lecturer in the School of Social Work, and Jeffrey Palermo, development coordinator for the University of Iowa School of Social Work. They just yesterday held a workshop for people on how to have difficult conversations. And Allison, before the break, we were talking about how to diffuse the emotion in the conversation. If you listen to someone, ask them why they feel like they feel, and are able to reflect that back. Oh, you have made this decision because of this. So when you reflect that back and it kind of helps to diffuse the emotion, where do you go from there?
Yeah, well, then once you acknowledge, like, I hear you, I hear where you're coming from, I hear what this means to you, then you explore that a little bit further. And so once you are able to, one, check for understanding, that you're reflecting back that this is what you heard and it's not infused with your own stuff, mm-hmm. and that you have some idea about the emotional context behind it, then you can invite more information. So this is what we identify as curious inquiry. And it's really being about authentically curious, not trying to ask questions to further your own agenda. And so it's like, you know, don't you think that if you thought this way, then something else would happen? Or did you happen to read this one particular article?
So starting the question with don't you think is probably the absolute wrong way to ask that question. But how do you
Absolutely.
Ask the question?
So one of our strategies related to our open-ended questions can be, tell me more. Tell me more about what you've experienced with this. Tell me more about what concerns you most about this particular issue or topic. Tell me more about
what you're
saying.
I can see that you feel really strongly about this issue. You know, where are you coming from? What experiences have you had with this issue? Because we're trying to create empathy rather than win an argument.
And this isn't an act, right? I mean, if you're trying to open the conversation up by like this, you have to be vulnerable too,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That's hard for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, these are people that you're wanting a relationship with. These are people that you want to stay in connection with. And in order to create coalitions and reach across differences with other groups, that's what we need to do, is find where we have common ground. You can't do that unless you really understand where they are coming from and really listen to that.
All right. Do you have to entertain the idea that you can learn something from this person? Because I think a lot of times when we enter into these conversations, both sides have these cement block ideas that cannot be moved, or they think cannot be moved. So you have to admit that maybe you can learn something, right?
Yeah, you have to approach it with an attitude of respect and, you know, really welcoming what that person has to offer. There's always something to learn. And one of the things that we're trying to learn in this kind of exercise is what is the emotional connection that they have? Because most likely when there's something that you feel really passionate about, you have a connection to it emotionally. You've had an experience or a hurt that it's connected to. And so if you can gather enough information and find out where that began, you will have empathy and you will see that it comes from, you know, a real place, a real personal experience or more than one. And then you have a different kind of conversation going on.
All right. So you can validate how they're feeling emotionally, explore it, and learn something yourself about where they have traveled to mm-hmm. arrive to their opinion. But that's not going to change my opinion. I mean, and I think a lot of us are itching for that opportunity to try to convince somebody. Mm-hmm. So do we get to do that?
I think that's a great question, because it is. It's about creating an environment where shifts can actually happen. So if you want to change somebody's mind, telling people that they're wrong and they should just change their mind generally isn't very effective. But that's kind of what we do. And we fall into these patterns of point, counterpoint, and may the best debate win, or the loudest. And those, generally speaking, don't result in long-lasting personal attitude change. Change across attitudes, and especially related to deeply held prejudices, whatever those might be, are shifted by relationships, by being in relationship with people and having greater exposure and openness of understanding of different perspectives. Those are where changes can happen.
And personal stories.
And so being able to get to a place where people can settle into relationship, allow those stories to be heard, including the stories that are deeply resonant of things that they disagree with.
So hopefully, if you have this conversation with somebody and you are a good active listener and you give them an opportunity to tell their story, then the hope is that they'll give you the opportunity to tell your story too, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
But what if they don't?
And then they don't. So, I mean, I think you mentioned earlier about the risk and vulnerability that's involved in these conversations. And one of the risks is that what you're modeling is not going to be reciprocated. And especially if it's someone you're in a relationship with, you've already established possibly some patterns of communication, and this is shifting that pattern. It's disrupting a certain kind of flow. So it makes sense for people to approach it defensively or with skepticism, or like, you're not really trying to listen to me, you're trying to find an in for your agenda. And that's fair, because that's generally how we've been talking about really contentious issues. And so it can take some time to rebuild those patterns, to model that. And then, yeah, the risk is that it's not reciprocated. And I still consider that a win in the sense that you came away with a deeper understanding of where someone's coming from than what you had before. And then that can inform what your next move is, which might be, this is not creating an environment where where I can feel heard, where my story can be told, where my wounds can be expressed. And if that's the case, then we can make a decision about that. Like, okay, I have some context. What do I do with this?
The having that conversation, just listening and not blowing your top, not losing your cool. I mean, that's kind of a victory in and of itself, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure you could feel very proud of yourself for not blowing up. But what else do you want people to really take away from that experience?
Well, I want them to recognize that I recognize their humanity. They're not the other. They're not, you know, in some way bad or evil because they disagree with me. I want to keep the relationship intact. We can agree to disagree, but we can still have a respectful conversation, and we need to learn how to do that.
So much of the rhetoric that I've been seeing lately, you know, we've had a lot of issues come to the surface that a lot of us consider to be black and white moral mm-hmm. issues. I mean, with the people's reactions to the neo-Nazis marching in Charlottesville, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of I'm sorry, I have no tolerance for someone who can tolerate that. A lot of those black and white moral issues. When you get to that point where you're like, well, if you think that's okay, then I don't want anything to do mm-hmm. with you. What are the pitfalls of having that kind of unbreakable barrier? Because, I think, again, with one of those moral issues where it's very easy to see what is right and what is wrong. What's wrong with saying, no, I'm sorry, I can't tolerate that?
There's nothing wrong with that. There really isn't. You have to decide for yourself how far you're willing to invest in a relationship. If you have tried these other things and you don't feel like you're being heard or listened to, then, you know, you may decide that you don't have the time or energy to invest in that relationship anymore. That's okay to draw your own boundaries. You say, you know how I feel. I know how you feel. I still care about you. You know, I still would like to stay in connection with you, but we can't talk about this.
So just to say, this is off limits for
yeah.
us.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about other things, but this is not a subject that we're going to broach.
And some families have, you know, drawn the line. These are the things we're going to talk about over the turkey, and these are the things we're not, because we want to enjoy our time together. But I also think, you know, having healthy disagreements and those kinds of conversations without attacking one another or being hurtful, that's also possible.
Well, and I also feel like with these very difficult lines of division that we do forget the humanity mm-hmm. of the other. So just having that exchange and reminding yourself that this person is also a human being with a life experience and maybe we disagree strongly, but they are entitled to their own opinions.
Yeah. And I think that's something that it's not even just about opinions. So stances, which have real social consequences, you know, these I want to be cautious about the notion of like there are disagreements or difference of opinion, and then there are things that also have their embedded stances that have real reverberations in people's lives, and so you mentioned Charlottesville as an example of that, and at the same time, what's really easy to do to distance ourselves from things with which we disagree strongly or have just a moral opposition to is to demonize. And ultimately, when we demonize, we end up in a place where we can't address it because it's just been cast off as that is evil, that is awful, these people are fill in the blank, you know, and it distances ourselves from engagement. And I think that the demonization doesn't help us get to a place of really addressing it and achieving justice, because we're all in this.
So in your workshop, I know you did some role playing. Mm-hmm. Do you suggest that people practice this?
Absolutely.
How do you practice it?
It's
how do you get ready?
It's very hard to learn the skills without practicing it. So we pair people off and they pick a topic that's hard for them to talk about, make it real, and then set up the situation. And one person, you know, you can tell them, all right, I need you to say these words, and then I will try to respond. So, you know, yesterday, what was my topic? I can't remember even what. But it doesn't take long, but you have to do it many, many times before it becomes
automatic.
Natural. You know, and that you're comfortable in that situation. Some people are going to be easier to do it with than others. People you're closer to might be harder in some ways. So you can pick any topic and set up the situation, and then the person gives you the prompt, and then you start out by reflecting and making sure you're being understood, and then gathering more information, opening the conversation up to get behind what the upset is, and then getting feedback from the person that you role played with to see, well, how were you feeling when I was doing that? Was that effective? Did you feel heard? You know, and just checking in on how it went.
So this puts you on the spot, and we only have a couple minutes left before the break, but can you give me an example of a time when that's really made a difference in your life to be able to diffuse a situation like that, to de-escalate a conversation? That was unfair.
That's okay. No, I think that the leading with empathy, I'll use just a personal example. I mean, these are things that happen in everyday relationships, right? So I'll use the example of just with me with my partner. Like when we are in a tug of rope, or my children, and we are in tug of war, and we're like, I want you to do this. Well, I want to do this. Well, that's not fair. Well, you're not hearing me. And we're going back and forth. And I finally just like stop and say, okay, you're feeling hurt because I, instead of acknowledging where you were coming from, I tried to one-up you with my agenda. And it changes the whole tone.
Just pulls the emotion out of it. We're going to take another break. Allison, I know we have to say goodbye to you.
Yes.
And thank you so much for being here today. Allison Oliver is a University of Iowa lecturer in the School of Social Work. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And Jeffrey, you stay with us. Jeffrey Palermo is Development Coordinator for the University of Iowa School of Social Work. We're going to continue this conversation about how to have difficult conversations in a moment. And we're also going to talk about how to have those difficult conversations in the workplace, which can be particularly tricky. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are talking about how to have difficult conversations. Have you found yourself in one of these very sticky situations and want to know how to deal with it? Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me, Jeffrey Palermo, Development Coordinator for the University of Iowa School of Social Work. She was one of the administrators, facilitators in a workshop held yesterday on how to have difficult conversations. And I also want to bring Heather Woody into the conversation now. Heather is a Master Certified Coach in North Liberty, president of Heather Woody Unlimited. Hello, Heather.
Hi there. How are you today?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. And I want to shift the conversation. We've talked a lot about how to have these conversations, and the skills we've talked about would work pretty well in any environment, although we've kind of focused on these interpersonal relations. But in the workplace, we can really find ourselves with some major challenges when we have differing opinions from people that we work with, right?
That's right. Every single day. It's happening everywhere.
So in the workplace, what are some of the really important things that we need to take into consideration when, you know, somebody at the water cooler may say something that feels inflammatory to you because it's something that you really disagree with?
Yeah, you know, I think it's one of those things that can be hard to even recognize the significance of or even casting too much significance on certain conversations that happen. So I think the very first thing is sort of recognizing, you know, that maybe something significant has been said or could snowball into a bigger issue. And I always tell folks, you know, first step back and just examine, you know, what you heard, making sure that you aren't casting more into it than is needed. But if you do recognize that maybe a difficult conversation or a confrontational conversation might be needed, you know, making sure that we gut check our emotions first, and ensure that we're heading into that conversation with sound mind. And the biggest piece is right intention. What is my intention with going back to this person and perhaps having a deeper conversation about what needs to be said?
Well, right, because, of course, the people we've talked about how some people have found friendships broken or family relationships strained or even estrangements in the year or so with this deeply divided political climate that we're in. But in a workplace, you don't have that choice, right?
You're working with these people. These are the people that you are sort of stuck with or honored to work with, however you see. But it is something that I notice that more people tend to avoid those conversations because they do fear if I step into that, I've got to work with these people every day. I need to sit next to them every day. I don't want my workplace to be a painful experience. But on the flip side of that, when I'm working with people, I ask them, what's the trade that you're making? Are you making a trade where, you know, now you are miserable because you haven't cleared the air with someone? And so it's really stepping back. And that's a lot of the times what I do is help people walk through those. You know, it could be as simple as, you know, you had a difficult performance on a project and your boss said something kind of sideways to you about it, or, you know, you've got coworkers and peers who are saying derogatory things or making comments that are unnecessary. Any of these very, it feels like, yes, everybody's doing it everywhere kind of thing, but they tend to ruin your work experience. And as we say, life's too short to have a ruined work experience because of things we could manage.
Well, and Jeffrey, earlier we were talking about some of the skills, to take a deep breath and don't respond emotionally and to, you know, engage in a respectful way and listen to somebody. I mean, those are all great skills you can use in the workplace.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I always say the basis of the conversation has to be rooted in the deepest of respect. I tell people a lot that, you know, sometimes the kindest thing you can do is step into a harder conversation, but one that will allow you to have a better workplace relationship over time. So taking deep breaths, keeping your emotions in check, going at a time when it's relevant and when it's not at the peak of your emotions. Again, going back to what your intention is, what do I want as a result of this? And one of the things I also tell folks is, yes, this is a two-way conversation, of course, it should be. But the one person you can control in the whole thing is just yourself. You can't control someone's response but by making sure that how you're delivering your tone, how you're choosing your words wisely, making sure that those are aligned to get best outcomes. That's a critical piece. So we have to own our part in that as well.
Well, and do you need to stop and think about the person's relationship to you in the workplace? I mean, it's one thing if it's the person who sits in the next cube, but it's something else entirely if this person is your supervisor, right?
Yeah, right. So one of the examples I could give you right now is in a job in my past. I've been doing this a long time, but previous to this, I had a boss who, you know, really was not thoughtful about how they delivered feedback and really just gave it to you straight, which is fine, except for when they cross the line of disrespect and character attacks or insinuations that are just out of nowhere. And to sit through that without armor or having words to describe back, you know, what that was like, that's a scary situation. And it really does make the job miserable. So one of the strategies I give people a lot is, you know, take a notebook and pen always with you, especially when you're going into your boss. It can be a great thing to, you know, write things down, but it can also be an emotional distraction where if you feel your blood boiling, you focus more on writing what you're hearing so that you can channel it more productively and then respond with perhaps questions or feedback at another time.
Well, and if someone who is your supervisor is saying things that make you feel uncomfortable or unsafe, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that just because they're your supervisor that this is something that you have to live with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are always ways to manage that. One of the recommendations that I will often make to folks is for you to schedule time at another time after you've thought through how you intentionally want to approach it, because you are measured. You are definitely measured. Whether they are or not, you're measured by how you manage yourself. And so if you can take a deep breath, step back, go back with the intention to, you'll clarify with your boss that you would appreciate them, you know, perhaps handling feedback with a different intention or a different emotion, that you are more than willing to learn. I'm willing to take this feedback in. I'm willing to learn. And I'd like you to be respectful of my thoughts, my feelings, what have you. But I'm appreciative of the feedback. Then they're hearing that you're not opposing what they're saying. It's just the how they're delivering it. Well, and they need that gut check because more often than not, people don't hear themselves. And so they may or may not have intention behind that.
Jeffrey, I want to ask you, in talking to people about developing these skills in having these difficult conversations, we do have to think about our own emotional state, right? I mean, when you have a conversation with somebody and you don't get an opportunity to have your say, or you leave having heard things that were deeply upsetting to you, how do you talk with people about dealing with that kind of emotion?
We talk about it in terms of taking time with a safe person to empty your emotional cup. That might be venting or saying all the things that you couldn't say in the moment so that you're clearing yourself of all those negative feelings, and that enables you to think through what your next best step would be. It's very hard to park all of your feelings and not, you know, bring them into the situation. So if before you have that session with your boss, you vent with someone about all the feelings you have towards that person or how they treated you the last time, you're going to be in much better shape.
All right. So if you can enter into this as a calm, rational person
right.
yourself.
And that tone of voice, you know, keeping it calm and even, being relaxed, keeping eye contact, all of those nonverbals are important too.
Now, with the skills that you've been talking about, it's one thing to start in a calm, rational way. But, I mean, some of these topics get very, very difficult. It's hard to stay like that, to not allow your emotions to get the best of you as you go on. What do you say to people when they get to that state where they find themselves getting angry or starting to tear up, the kinds of emotions that you don't want to demonstrate in front of somebody, especially not in the workplace? How do you cope with that?
Well, I think it's fair to say, I'm taking this in. I'm doing the best that I can at the moment, but I'd like to take a break and get some water, or can we come back to this tomorrow? I don't necessarily believe that tears are always a disaster. It's expressing your humanity, but you also have to remember that the person that is your boss is also human, and you know they may be having a tough day. You don't know where they've just been or what's going on in their life. So, try not to demonize them and make them more powerful than they really are.
Heather, in the workplace, sometimes you might hear demeaning language or something that would make somebody uncomfortable, make somebody else uncomfortable in the workplace. And you may feel like, hey, I need to stand up for this person. How do you approach that? Because that can be really tricky as well.
It really can be. I do. We do talk about this a lot around, you know, when you hear perhaps workplace gossip, which is just a toxic kind of experience for folks, or, you know, again, someone's outright said something that they should not have, to really honestly find the courage. Simply, it can be a very simple, very mild comment. It doesn't have to be dramatic. But a comment to just subtly pull that person off the side and say, hey, you know what, your intention maybe not to have said this. Here's what I heard. You may want to clarify with that person what your intention was. You know, just to assume the best in that person, but to call it forward in a very even-keeled manner, not accusatory, but just, hey, this is what I heard. And I would just gut check that because I know that I could see that left a residue with that person. If you've got someone that is combative in that, then I think it's a different story. You know, I think it's an opportunity for you to, again, stand there and encourage and say, you know, that may be how you feel. And we are working as a team. And we need to find a way to put some of that aside. And I'm happy to hear that out with you. So you give that person a resource as to why they feel perhaps a certain way about an individual, you could allow them to vent to you and walk out those feelings, perhaps giving them an opportunity to vent, but also to offer them new perspective. I think the key has to be in any of these scenarios that it's stifled in a productive way, that it's not just pushed aside or, passed over, that it is. Someone does stand up for that situation. One of the things we talk a lot about is with office place gossip. I always coach people to say, you know, if you hear it and you walk by it, you're still participating in it. So if you hear it and you take that on, it's just simply this. It's, hey, I hear what you're saying. I think it would really be more respectful to let that person know your thoughts to them personally.
Well,
it's harder.
We are out of time, but thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome. No, thank you for having me.
Heather Woody, a master certified coach in North Liberty, president of Heather Woody Unlimited Incorporated. And Jeffrey Palermo, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Jeffrey, this is just the start of a series of these kind of workshops that you'll be having throughout the year at the University of Iowa School of Social Work, right?
Yes, once a month. We will.
All right. Jeffrey Palermo, development coordinator for the University of Iowa School of Social Work. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.